It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee along with Andy Donaldson. This week, we're continuing our candidate conversation series for Utah's Republican gubernatorial convention that's coming up on April 25th. We're extending invitations to all the candidates for governor and their running mates for lieutenant governor to be on our podcast and discuss their policy positions and why they are the best choice to lead the state's government. Joining us this episode is Republican Jason Christensen and his running mate, Drew Chamberlain. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
I want to start with you, Jason, and Drew, right after he's done. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? I mean, kind of who you are, what you've done in your life, and kind of what spurred you to want to become governor of the state of Utah?
Well, first of all, I've been a small business owner for the last 20 years. One of those self-made men. So I've seen my fair share of the difficulties, and I've seen my fair share of successes too. And during those times of difficulties, you just have to roll up your sleeves. And with the motto of when the going gets tough, the tough gets going, and just work. The last few years, the good Lord has blessed me with a loving marriage and a son as well, from mainland China, they're seeking the citizenship right now.
So what made you want to decide to be governor?
I've been involved in political activism for a number of years. I've ran for some different offices, but frankly, to run for governor now, we don't have time. Our state is those too much corruption within our state. The deep swamp is too deep. We've been seeing instances of the swamp and the corruption. For example, the biggest tax hike in Utah history back in December. And then to turn around and repeal it just because they don't want to see it on the ballot after we were successful at gathering more than enough signatures to put it on the ballot. The whole tax law had nothing to do with reforming taxes. It had everything to do with generating revenue for a special project that most people don't know anything about, the Inland Port project.
So, Drew, what about you? What's your background?
Oh, gosh. Married. I have 9 children. I've been involved in Republican Party politics for about 30 years. Pretty simple. I want lower taxes. I want less regulation. I want a lot of prosperity. And that's really my mantra. I just want those things. And I've always pushed for those. I always try to help wherever I can. Jason and I have known each other for a long time, and he asked me to run, and I thought that would be a great opportunity. So I decided to help him win the governorship.
Jason, let me ask you why you chose Drew.
Well, I had a few criteria, but the two most important criteria I wanted for a running mate is whoever I chose would end up running elections in the state. It's the highest office throughout the state for elections. So that person needs to be honest, of good report, and someone that knows how to run elections. And Drew ran elections for the GOP secretary a few years back for the Republican Party. So he knows how to run elections, and I know Drew's character, and many people say the same thing, that he has the utmost good character, honest report.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we need, because things have not been right in that office for quite some time now.
Amy, that's a good point. Have you read the Utah GOP Bylaw 8?
I have not.
You haven't? Mm-hmm. Every candidate for governor has to fill out Bylaw 8. It's a candidate disclosure, and it says that they'll follow the rules of the party. One of those rules is that you're not supposed to go outside the bylaws to try to get on the ballot, i.e. signatures, right? Mm-hmm. So they've all filled out an agreement with the party that they will not collect signatures, and if they do collect signatures, that they'll forfeit their membership in the party. Now, there's only three governor candidates that have not collected signatures, and those three are the only Republican candidates that any media should be talking to, because according to our own rules, they have agreed to forfeit their membership in the party and to not use the Republican moniker in the primary. And that's an important fact. We're talking about elections and rules. Now, mm-hmm. the state of Utah has election rules, too. If I were lieutenant governor, I would follow those rules. I wouldn't just ignore the ones that are inconvenient. I would follow them. These candidates should do the same thing.
Well, let me ask you a question, Drew, about that. What if the party rules are in conflict with the state law or the state rules?
Well, the party has its own rules and the state has their rules.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as our convention goes,
yeah,
coming up, we should be following our party rules.
Party rules.
And our party rules are very clear. They say, and all of these candidates agreed to it. They signed this thing, this disclosure, that they would not collect signatures. And that they, if they did, they would forfeit their membership in the party. Now, and I would love to hear the excuse or the, you know, what does John Huntsman have to say about that? He's obviously running as a Republican, but he also collected signatures.
Mm-hmm.
Can I jump in here for a second? Okay.
Yes, go ahead.
I recognize what you're saying here, Drew, but I would say that this is an unprecedented situation. So without being able to have contact with people, without risking people's health, you have little choice but to either forego your opportunity to try to run or ask for some kind of accommodation, which would be signatures,
mm-hmm.
so that you might be able to pursue your choice to run for public office. And to
now,
suggest that people are trying
Jason
to do something
have...
outside of the rules, I mean, they're not doing this willy-nilly. They're doing this because they have no other choice. Now, do you want to limit just the number of people who can do it? Because there's only one person on the ballot right now.
Actually, there's two.
I don't understand your question.
Well,
I
don't understand how it is that you... What is your complaint about wanting to use signatures to help to be able to get on the ballot when we have a situation
where
none of us can go outside?
You need to read through the candidate's disclosure that's in Bylaw 8 mm-hmm. on the Utah GP website. And it just says that you'll follow our rules. If you're going to use the Republican nameplate, you'll follow our rules. You will support our party's platform, and you follow the rules. Pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't follow the rules, in this case, collecting signatures, then you forfeit your membership in the party. It doesn't mean you can't run on the primary. You can, but you can't use a Republican moniker in the primary.
Yeah.
And those rules have been in place for almost 2 years. They knew about them. They signed them. They signed the disclosure. What's the problem with that? You just run in convention. It's simple.
And that's...
Which this year is a virtual convention, and they can very easily follow the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And the rules don't say anything about candidates utilizing signatures to get on the ballot. The rules are specific about filing and then going to the convention process,
mm-hmm.
of which case bylaw 7 and so, well, technically 7.5, the parties violating as well by these candidates not signing those disclosure documents to
right.
seek the convention process.
Right. Our chairman is allowing a non-Republican to speak in convention. It's unheard of. Mm-hmm. Never happened before.
I guess there's part of me that feels as though there should be a comment made. And this is an unprecedented situation. And though that rule says that, I think the spirit of the rule was to suggest that people should be, you want to follow that. They had no idea that there would be a pandemic such that people couldn't actually behave in their normal fashion. And so, I think there's some part of it that doesn't.
Yeah, but nothing's changed with the pandemic.
Yeah, and let me jump in, Jason. I think you've misunderstood their objection. They have an objection to SB 54, which is the fact that people can get on a ballot by collecting the signatures. And that's
all the way around the convention, right?
Yeah. So there are actually two candidates, Thomas Wright and Spencer Cox, who've already gotten enough signatures to be on the ballot in June. But I think, I guess we'll say GOP purists maybe believe that you shouldn't be able to collect signatures. You should only do it through the convention process, because allowing signatures allows people to go around the delegation, the delegate process of choosing a Republican candidate.
Great, great. If they want to fight me in the primary, great. I'm the best one to do that. But as far as convention, they should not be allowed to speak or gather votes in convention, because the spot is already made clear.
Okay, hold on. Wait. I just need to. I want to be able to let you continue the discussion, but we're running way over. I'm sorry. This is my fault. Okay. I should have been a little bit tighter on the time. When we come back, we'll allow a Republican candidate, Jason Christensen, and his running mate, Drew Chamberlain, to continue explaining their position on how the candidate should be chosen for the upcoming convention. You're listening to Voices of Reason.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas,
in the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
We are back with Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. This week, we're continuing our candidate conversation series for Utah's Republican gubernatorial convention coming up later this month. This week, joining us, Republican Jason Christensen and his running mate, Drew Chamberlain. And gentlemen, you were speaking of how you feel as though there's been some effort to kind of usurp how candidates are chosen to make it to the primary. Jason?
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, did you guys agree with my characterization of the... I guess of the issue that there are two, two types of thinking in the Republican Party. And one is that you should be able to collect signatures or acquire delegates. And the other one is you should respect the delegate process and go through that and convince the delegates that you're the candidate who should represent the party. And there's been this sort of schism since SB 54 was passed. Is that correct?
Right, but the party only allows convention candidates. The party does not allow a signature candidate to call themselves a Republican.
Yes.
And that's in our rules.
Yes, absolutely. And I just looked it up while you guys were talking. But I do want to take some of the time to talk about the issues that you guys care about, because I really think that I want voters to understand sort of what's important to you, what your priorities are. Are there specific issues that sort of motivated you to get in? I know Jason and I talked about Inland Port. What are some of the issues that sort of motivated you to say, I have to do more than just vote. I have to become part of the process. Jason?
Well, for me?
Yeah.
Well, like I said, Utah has, it's similar to D.C. or Chicago or California. Yeah, the swamp may work differently, but the swamp is equally as large, if not just as bad, here in Utah. And people may not recognize that. They don't see it, but you know, those a phrase from an old talk show commentator back in the day that said, you know, regarding to politicians is watch what they do, not what they say. And so often we have politicians that say as a whole lot of things, but in reality, they're always violating the rules, they're always violating the laws, and they're always kowtowing to special interests, either if it's foreign or corporate or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And that corruption forms a dirty, stinking swamp. And I'm in this race to drain that swamp, to actually drain it.
What can the governor do about that? Because I think probably a lot of us have that complaint about politics. What can the governor actually do about that?
Those are a few things. Mm-hmm. One, ultimately, it starts with leadership.
Okay.
Knowing how to communicate, knowing how to have sit-down conversations, knowing how to be true and strong with one's principles, which so many people tend to bend on those principles, and I'm too unbending regarding principles. Being able to be a free thinker, to come up with actual palatable solutions to appease all sides of the table, and ultimately the people themselves. But you know, leadership is first and foremost, and showing forth a clear vision of for the future, and disclosing what and being honest as to all the possible problems or threats that's current or coming down the pipeline.
Yeah.
The next one would be, and I know how to lead. I was chairman of the Independent American Party for 2 years, and that party became the third largest third party in the state of Utah under my leadership, because I fully believe if you agree 80% of the time, then that's when you need to unite. Mm-hmm. And President Reagan back in the day believed the same principle. So that works. Anyway, the next thing for true leadership as what the governor can do is the power of the veto pen. How often does the governor veto legislation? How often does he threaten to veto regarding conservative ideals? You know, so often the governor goes along with the swamp ideals and sign legislation, and very few times vetoes bad legislation. The power of the pen to veto legislation needs to be utilized more often, especially with the fact that the legislature continues to propose over 1,000 pieces of legislation every legislative session.
Mm-hmm. Drew, let me ask Drew to jump in because we are running short on time. But Drew, were there issues that motivated you or that were more compelling to you and that you felt like you had to get involved with?
Well, I know that if Jason were governor, he would be teaching people that smaller, limited government gives us more prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure he'd be using that veto pen a lot and challenging the legislature, saying, look, this is not a constitutionally approved bill that you sent me. I will not sign it. And I'm trying, I'd be trying to reduce taxes, reduce regulation, improve our prosperity, let the state go, let people and businesses prosper. And that would give us such a great economy. We have a good economy now, or we did.
Yeah.
Now there's no economy now. But that's what I want to see. Lower taxes, less regulation.
All right, listen, we're going to try to even our time out, so we'll come back and, with the next segment and go into some more of the policy issues that you find are important. I wanted to talk to you, Jason, about some of the things I've seen on your website and some of the issues that you feel are important, and we'll come back with that when we continue with our candidate conversation with Jason Christensen and his running mate, Drew Chamberlain. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. This week, we're having another candidate conversation, and this time, we're having it with Republican Jason Christensen and his running mate, Drew Chamberlain. And, Jason, I went to your website, and it is DrainTheUtahSwamp.com, and it mentions on here that you have your top seven promises. And what I wanted to kind of gloss over them a little bit and kind of get your ideas from them. What do you, for instance, you mentioned abolishing the state income tax, making it illegal to use property taxes. Amy has some ideas on that. You mentioned the importance, some other things. Can you talk about first what the idea of abolishing the state income tax? Why would you do that, and how would you generate revenue?
Well, first of all, you know, if you believe in the scriptures, great. You know, it throughout all scriptures, it talks about income and property taxes being the most immoral taxation forms of taxation there is. If you look at the founders of this country, the founders of this country say the same thing. Property and income tax should never be proposed. If you look at the Supreme Court case back at the turn of the century, back around 1900, same thing says that is that it was illegal to go down the path of income and property taxes. You know, so, yeah, on the moral grounds, we need to get rid of income and property taxes. On the fiscal aspect for the people, you know, especially right now where it's hard to be working, you know, I'm sure every Utahan would love to have thousands more dollars of the hard-earned money in the pockets every month, every year that they currently pay. So so allow the people to have more of the money. But regarding to fund government, you know, those two proven methods that are voluntary methods. One, you know, is pushing for a state lottery. And you know, Utah loses millions per year with people driving over across the border to Wyoming or Idaho or Arizona or California or Nevada to play the lottery. So why don't we do a state lottery and have the funds only fund education dollars, which means not only education would be fully funded, but we'd also be able to pay the teachers a competing wage for once. And if you don't want it, if you don't like the lottery, great. You don't have to pay into it. It's not mandatory like income tax and property tax. But going back to the morality issue regarding income and property taxes, so often government, well, it's a privacy issue regarding income tax, and if you don't pay, you're threatened with jail time.
You're breaking up just a little bit. You're just breaking up a little bit, Jason.
Sorry.
Sorry to interrupt you. But I wondered if Drew had anything to add on that. And then I definitely have a question about it.
No, I don't.
Okay. So I actually like the idea of eliminating the property tax. But that mostly funds schools. So would you separate it out? Like our state constitution would have to be changed, but how would you... Or would it be one pot that you divide up between the needs?
Well, agreed. The state constitution would have to be changed on this issue. But yes, the state lottery, mm-hmm. absolutely. Only one pot and one pot only for education dollars. And have it completely separated that way. Mm-hmm. But regarding the rest of... regarding the rest of government, funding government, you know, we need to adopt a state bank. And the state bank idea, there's only one state in the country that's had such an idea, and that's North Dakota. And it's worked well. In fact, they have the lowest income in property taxes throughout all the nation because of the state bank in North Dakota. So the state bank, we treat it like a typical savings and loan. So people who are, especially right now, that don't have much money, that would love to have a loan to start a business or to buy a house or buy a car, go to the state bank as a typical savings and loan that's separate from the Federal Reserve Bank. And we help Utah business, anything that's Utah first. We don't branch it out to anyone else outside of the state, only for Utahns. But, savings and loan. And then all the interest, all the fees, all the money that banks typically make, have that money go to fund government. All the profit earnings from that bank to fund government. For example, one of the things the state bank could be doing is, we work with the United States Treasury Department regarding coining our own state dollar, backed by gold, and required Rio Tinto mine to pay the taxes in the gold that they bring up out of the mine. The Rio Tinto mines way too much gold, and where we could be utilizing that as reserves for a rainy day to back a dollar. We could sell that dollar on the stock exchange against a weakened dollar or other currencies, and allow people. It's an excellent money business idea that could generate the state a lot of money. And as the state's generating a ton of money through the state bank and the state lottery, and the citizens themselves would have even more money by not having the burdensome and immoral income tax and property tax dollars that so often gets abused.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting idea to look at funding things a different way. How tough a sell do you think that's going to be to the Utah legislature, which just tends to be a bit more conservative than regular Utahns? We have about a minute, sorry, but how hard it will be to convince?
I think that the convincing the legislature to pass a state bank, I think would be fairly easy to do. Mm-hmm. The state lottery, we could convince the legislature, but to be frank, the church also tends to have their say in things. Mm-hmm. And I would love to have a good civilized conversation with the church and with the certain key players in the legislature, open up the scriptures and just say, look, show me where I am off base in this, and let's get this thing done for all of Utahns. Because nowhere in the scriptures the lottery, or if someone wants to say lottery is gambling, fine. Let's look that up in scriptures. It's nowhere in the scriptures. Whereas income tax and property tax, there's several stories in the scriptures of tyrants abusing those two forms of revenue collection to impose all manner of tyranny upon the people.
All right. Listen, when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Republicans Jason Christensen and Drew Chamberlain, who are running for governor and lieutenant governor, respectively. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I am Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson.
We're continuing our candidate conversation series for Utah's Republican gubernatorial convention coming up later this month. And today we're talking to Republican Jason Christensen and his running mate, Drew Chamberlain. And what we want to kind of get to now is Amy loves to talk about education because it's one of her, you know, priorities. And I can understand that. It's a priority of many families and individuals here in Utah. So, Jason, can you give us some idea of what how you would kind of approach funding education and providing a positive public education experience for Utah's children?
Well, having children of my own and in school, education in this country used to be far, far better before the U.S. Department of Education came down the pipeline, and that which was recent, which going back to the late 70s, early 80s. So what I would like to do is to for the legislature to propose a piece of legislation called nullifying the U.S. Department of Education, which means by going that route, by nullifying that federal act and separating us from the United States Department of Education, Utah would have a lot more freedom regarding material of what to teach. We could teach, our education would excel at that point because the teachers would have more freedom of to teach, to have hands-on teaching with the students. The parents would have more freedom to homeschool if they want. Especially with this COVID-19 that's going on, you know, many parents are realizing that Common Core is actually extremely dangerous. We need to be in control of our own educational material. And get rid of the Common Core, open up the door for families that wanted to continue with this online education. Many families like the idea. Mm-hmm. We need to cease all threats against homeschoolers, allow homeschoolers to teach how they want to teach the mm-hmm. children. But going back to banning property tax collecting and usage, and mm-hmm. Abolishing property tax dollars and income tax dollars in the state, the homeschool family community would have more of their money that they could use to teach their children instead of pay for someone else's children. Mm-hmm. But going with the lottery idea, that lottery idea would create the funding to yes, pay the teachers more of a competing wage, but also invest in the online material to excel in on the online education as well as the schools, mm-hmm. as well as charter school option. And create a far better material to teach the children. And so our education would want, like everything else, like economically and everything else I want to do in the state, education would also be a shiny light on the hill.
Yeah.
For the world and for the country to see, to look upon.
Drew, let me ask you sort of a variation of that. Is there, you've raised kids and had kids go through the educational system and I'm sure did a lot of teaching yourself. Have you like had any insights from this whole, everybody has to teach via the internet or the distance learning thing? Have you had any insights or?
Utah has been trending towards online education for a long time. And then isn't it amazing that we just went completely online education in about 2 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
It's working fairly well. It's got some bugs, But think of the money that you could save if you didn't have to have buildings, you didn't have to send your children to a school. You could do it all online. You could record with the very best professors. Once you get that recording, you could use that curriculum for decades mm-hmm. of time and have better education at a much lower cost. You could pay teachers more. This is all a positive thing in my mind. I have a child, you know, that was a B student. When she turned 16, she said, "Dad, why don't I just go to college?" And everybody says, "Well, you can't go to college. You're only 16. Well, sure you can. You can take the GED. She did. And she went straight to college. Mm-hmm. She was in college at 16 years old. Why don't we think outside the box and do those kind of things? We can get better education for less money. Mm-hmm. And if anything good came out of this COVID problem we have, it's online education. It's been wonderful.
Yeah.
We've done it for 10 years.
Let me ask both of you, do you either of you have a mentor politically or in your life, you know, spiritually, ethically, somebody that you look up to, and who is that and why?
Oh, for me, I'm a bookworm. I love reading. I love studying. Mm-hmm. For many years, one of my mentors is a 50 plus year PhD scholar on the Constitution, Scott Bradley up in Logan. Mm-hmm. But that's changed because of how much I love to read mm-hmm. and study. So my mentor, it would technically be about 250 years old by now. And that would be, or actually 300 years by now, which would be John Adams. Mm-hmm. I consider myself a scholar on John Adams' life, his history, what isn't taught.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is, in fact, so much of his personality I see in me. But he, you know, so that be my mentor regarding things political nature. But yes,
John Adams. We're running a little bit short on time, so I got to ask you the last question is most important, though. Why should people, and this is to both of you, why should people support you and vote for you for governor and lieutenant governor? Jason?
It's simple. If you look, going back to the talk show commentator a number of years, he's passed on by now, but what he said was, and I repeat, regarding politicians, watch what they do, not what they say. So if you watch what they've done, every opponent in this race is either part of the swamp, the part of the problem. And myself and Drew are the only ones in this race that are not the swamp, who do not have connections to the swamp. And with that being said, and with our palatable solutions of what to replace the system with once we drain the swamp, we are the only ones that's capable of defeating the Huntsmans and the Coxes of the world.
And Drew?
Lower taxes, less regulation, more prosperity. Why would anyone vote for anyone else? Jason Christensen and Drew Chamberlain.
Excellent.
Thank you,
Listen,
guys.
I want to thank both of you, Jason Christensen and Drew Chamberlain, Republican candidates for governor and lieutenant governor. And thank you very much. And best of luck to you on the campaign trail. Join us again for the next episode of the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about our show, please contact us via email at vormed@gmail.com or at vorjasonl@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at @ADonSports and at @JasonLee1. Our show's Twitter handle is @VORPodcast. Check out our Facebook page, and you can also find and subscribe to free episodes of our podcast on all the places where you find interesting content. Be sure to review our show as well. We'd love to get your feedback, and it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, I'm Jason Lee. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason.
Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.